everyone, and welcome to another monthly installment of the Student Press Law Center's podcast, where we talk about legal developments affecting the rights of those working in and around student journalism. I'm Frank Lamani, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center, and the SPLC is a nonprofit advocate for the rights of student journalists and the advisors who work with them. You can connect with us online at splc.org, on Twitter at SPLC, and you can always drop us a question about your rights, SPLC at splc.org. I'm privileged today to actually be talking face-to-face with our guest, Chris Evans. Chris is the journalism advisor at the University of Vermont. He's also the First Amendment chair for the College Media Association, in which role he serves as kind of a first responder for folks at the college level who feel like their rights are being compromised or threatened. And Chris was one of the leading organizers and champions behind the successful effort in Vermont, which just culminated in passage of a model press freedom statute that is really one of the best of its kind in the country, protecting the independence of student journalists and also protecting the rights of advisors against retaliation. So, Chris, thank you for all of those things, and thank you for making time to talk today about your experience working on that bill and working with the CMA.
And thank you so much, Frank.
So, start us off by, I know that when you and I first had a conversation about getting a New Voices effort off the ground in Vermont, you did some outreach to college advisors to try to get an idea of the enormity of the problems that they were having, both at the public and at the private college level. What were some of the things you heard?
Sure. So in my position at CMA, I deal a lot with advisors who come to us with their problems, but I had a sense, just from talking to other advisors who do the same kind of work that I do, that there were stories that weren't being told. So I sent out an email to a listserv that a lot of us use and simply asked, are there times when you feel as though you're getting pressured by the administration? Specifically, I asked around budget issues where they are threatening to take away money because they want to control content or want you as an advisor to control content. And I got back some answers on that. I also got back answers in a more general way. And the answer was, sadly, yes, there are a lot of issues out there, times when administrators say, do this or else. The or else sometimes is, potentially we're going to fire you, which is, or not renew your contract. And that came up time and again on this survey. It was interesting, the kinds of things we heard. My favorite, I think, I've got lots of favorites, but one is a teacher who said that she was in trouble because her students had reported about the top 10 places to hook up on campus. You can't let them write that kind of thing, the administrator said. And there's another time where students had written a piece about a lizard being in a salad in the cafeteria, and they said, oh, you can't let them do that. And so it's really far more common, and none of these cases, we got about 24 different stories out of that, and none of these cases had been reported before. And these are the cases that will go unreported. We included them, as of course you know. We wrote a report last year for the American Association of University Professors about threats to student media. We reported some of these anonymously in there, but it was the first time they had been talked about, because generally speaking, when a student media advisor is under pressure, he or she doesn't want to say anything because it's going to make their jobs harder, and therefore they stay silent. So it happens a lot more than we know about, and that's just the facts.
And I should add 2 points. First of all, the report that Chris is talking about, the Threats to the Independence of Student Media report that was published under the auspices of AAUP, is available at splc.org, along with a podcast interview we did at that time with Hank Reichman of AAUP, who was one of the co-authors along with Chris and myself. The other is just to the point about these unreported cases, some of which are really egregious cases and some of which are just kind of funny and memorable. All of those are cases that we would love love to have been able to bring to public attention had people felt the courage to be able to complain publicly about them, because there is a real persuasive value in letting legislators know how often these types of cases happen, how often students feel intimidated or employees feel intimidated from writing something that often is a matter of very apparent public interest and concern. And so it would be wonderful to find better ways to capture those stories, and of course, having the law on your side will embolden people to come forward with them. So you and the Mike Donahue, who's the head of the Vermont Press Association, were really kind of the 1-2 punch behind the New Voices of Vermont movement. And can you talk a little bit about building that organization and about lining up support for that bill?
Sure. So it was about a year before we got the bill passed that I initially expressed to you that I would like to help create this movement, and you gave me excellent advice, Frank. You told me the kinds of people to draw together. We had a senator in the state who had tried twice before to get this kind of legislation enacted, was never able to get it out of committee, largely because she didn't have people coming together saying, this is a problem we need to take care of. So we found those people. We found high school students, college students, who talked about why we need a law protecting student journalists from censorship by administrators. Went to, as you say, Mike Donahue at the Vermont Press Association to really get the Vermont press to come together and say, listen, this is important by educating. You know, if we have students being told in school, in high school, that in order to print something, you first need to have it approved by the principal, which is what the law is, until you get a New Voices law involved, you are telling them you need to ask permission from the government before you can publish something. And so Mike and tons of editors and we would go, there's this wonderful journalist, her name is Anne Galloway, with Vermont Digger, vtdigger.org, which covers state government, and we went to her, she's a nonprofit, and we went to her, and I didn't get the words out of my mouth. I said, we're trying to work on getting a law to protect student and at that point she just said, whatever you want. And she and other folks like her are the kind of people, Mike drew together the newspapers in the state. He went and spoke to members of the House of Representatives committees. We had students, I mean, students are so important in this. We had students go to both the Senate and the House committees and tell their stories. And it was, I mean, what I was surprised about was how much the legislators just assumed that students had the right to tell their stories in the newspaper of their high school, largely because when we were, men of a certain age, right? When we were in high school, students did have the right to say what they wanted to say. These legislators thought that was still the case. They didn't know about the Hazelwood decision. So telling them that and then getting students in front of them to say, listen, we tried to report on this instance of public racism being expressed at our school, signs being held up that were clearly racist, clearly offensive, that went on social media, that were in the local press, happened at our high school, and we want to talk about that as well. And being told by the principal, no, you can't talk about that because we don't think it's a good idea. It might upset some people. When you get students coming in and saying, listen, we just want to have a conversation about issues of concern to our readership, and they can say the principal said, no, you're not allowed to have that conversation, that, combined with everything else, good sponsor, advocates in the Senate and in the House, the Press Association, the students, get all that together, you've got a team. And with that team, you can get this law passed. A year later, we have a law.
there was a lot of skill and a lot of hard work involved in this effort in Vermont, but in just about every state where we've successfully seen one of these laws get enacted, there's also been some luck involved. There's been some serendipity involved, and you had a particular stroke of luck because it turns out that a person in a position to help pass the law also happened to work practically right around the corner from you at the University of Vermont, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So Senator Philip Baruth is a professor of English and an author at the University of Vermont, who I'd interacted with a couple of times. I have a radio show. I had a radio show for several years where I interviewed local writers, and I'd interviewed Phil, and we just had a good rapport. I hardly ever saw him on campus, though, because we work in different parts of the campus. Shortly after you and I had spoken about trying to get things going, I had connected with him by email saying, here's something that we're working with. Frank, I know you too. You reached out to him. It was sort of like this group effort. The national support was amazingly helpful in this too, by the way. And so Phil knew we were interested, and I was looking for the chance to really get things going. I was walking to my car. I decided to go home for lunch one day. I never go home for lunch. So I started walking to my car, and I got to the crosswalk, and who should be standing there but Philip Baruth, Senator Baruth. And I say, oh, Phil, good to see you. Just want to let you know we're still trying to move ahead with this whole thing. And he said, yeah, you know, what's funny is I just found out, this is Phil talking, what's funny is I just found out that I'm actually going to be head of the Education Committee, and we'll be getting the bill, and yes, we're right on board, we want to help out with that. So as we're crossing the street, we're having this conversation about how Phil is going to help us out. And, you know, and to be honest, I'm not sure at what point he found out he was going to be with the Education Committee. It honestly might have been by the time we'd contacted him by email, but he was letting me know in that moment, you know, here's, you're going to have an advocate in the committee where that will be hearing the bill. We had a sponsor in the person who had put it forward before us. That was Senator White, Jeanette White. And Phil signed on as a co-sponsor, and he also got the co-chair of the Education Committee to sign on. So we had three sponsors for this bill. And then inside, we found an advocate in Representative Joe Benning, who was a Republican. He's Phil and the co-chair, Becca Balint, were Democrats. Joe Benning is a Republican, and he wound up being one of our... he was a strong advocate, one of our strongest advocates for sure, but having someone who was not sort of a lefty liberal in any way be able to come forward and say censorship is wrong and we need to take a stand against it with this law, that allowed us to pass the House. His arguments were so good, allowed us to pass the Senate unanimously. That gave us momentum going into the House committee, where we stalled a little bit, and this is where the Vermont Press Association really helped out, because they were there every day. Mike Donahue was there nearly every day once we got to the House, just saying, you know, so remember us? We got this bill going on. And it was touch and go toward the end. We didn't actually get to... we didn't get the vote until it got dragged into... Our bill never... The original bill never made it to a vote, but Senator Baruth took the language of the bill, put it in a general education bill, and it was that bill that eventually got to the House floor and back to the Senate and all that stuff that happens in the legislative process. And on the last day that was planned for the legislature, it got a vote in the House, and it was unanimous. Went to the governor after that, Republican Governor Phil Scott, got his signature. Mike arranged for a photo op for the students to be there for a ceremonial signing of the bill, and they all got pens, you know, that the governor signed with. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned, and I think it's worth emphasizing, the critical value of students as the face of this movement. I've now worked in the half a dozen states where these bills have gotten through the legislatures, And in every case, an essential ingredient has been to put that student face front and center in front of the committee members. In my opinion, as much as anything else, there is a psychological benefit to them looking these young people in the eye and being able to discern that they're mature, they're professional, and they're trustworthy. I think a lot of people in authority positions, either they have teenagers of their own or they have stereotypes about teenagers, and they don't necessarily regard them as especially mature, professional, or trustworthy. And so to be able to actually eyeball the student journalist who's asking for this autonomy and to know that they can be trusted with it, I think, is big. The other thing I observed very, very clearly in Illinois, where we had a bill that seemed to be in quite difficult straits getting out of the first committee in the House, was that packing the committee room with students was potentially a decisive moment in the history of that campaign. The bill was foundering in committee. There was every reason to think that it was going down. People raised complaint after complaint and question after question, but the room was packed with high school students, and I think that they just did not want to vote these kids' bill down in front of them, and so they went ahead and they passed it on, even after telling the sponsor, we've got a half a dozen things we don't like, and we want you to fix all these things, but we're going to give you a pass today. And I really do think that if we hadn't had a room full of enthusiastic student supporters, that might have gone south, and the history of the New Voices movement might have been quite different. So student involvement is really critical. You had a particular experience with a high school student in Vermont who came with a compelling individual story to tell.
Sure. At Burlington High School, we had co-editors, Jake Bucci and Alexander Silberman. They had tried to report a story that was shut down by their administration. Burlington High School, Vermont is a very, very white state. We are not very diverse at all. I'm thinking of this off the top of my head, so I could be completely wrong, and I apologize, but we are in the range of 95% white folks. And Burlington High School, which is in Burlington, Vermont, which is the largest city in the state, still not all that large, is the probably most diverse high school. So we have many people of color who go there as well. And we were playing against a football game against another school that was, I would say, more privileged in terms of finances, economic, there's some economic issues, and certainly had a lot of white folks there in that school. A student from that school, playing to probably the worst stereotype of people from the school, came with a sign and held it up at the football game, and it was remarkably racist. It implied that the students on the Burlington High School team, who were black, were gang members, that they were illegitimate fathers. It was an offensive sign. The school newspaper took pictures of it. They prepared to write a story about it. Meanwhile, the picture, I don't know if it was theirs, but a picture went viral. Everyone was talking about this. The local alt weekly, 7 Days, very highly read newspaper, carried a story about it. Everyone was talking about it. But Alexander and Jake, they simply were not allowed to run the story in the Burlington High School newspaper, The Register, because the principal said it would bother people. This was the story. This was, we eventually had to sort of like settle on what's our argument, what's our central argument. This story wound up being our central argument. The other thing, sort of the by the way thing, or the kicker on this, was that following that incident, the administration required them to bring the paper to them every time before it went to press. There had been a long-standing policy of we should probably show the paper to the administration before it goes to press. The advisor and the editors had sort of gone along with that, but at that time it became a rock-hard rule. We are going to approve this, and if we don't approve it, it's gone. It's going to get yanked off the stands. That was the argument that won over the legislators, I think.
Yeah, and sometimes it only takes one. I will say we had an experience comparable to that in Maryland, which passed its version of New Voices in 2016. And in Maryland, an advisor came forward and shared a story, which was actually several years old, but she only felt comfortable sharing it because she had changed jobs. It was about a student who had written an article following the Newtown High School shootings, where the student was localizing that story, asking people, did they feel like their own school was safe from a mass shooting, and did they feel comfortable coming to school every day? Everyone in the story said, yes, I feel comfortable. Yes, I feel safe. There was one hedged comment from one student who said, I would feel safer if we had metal detectors in the school. And based on that one comment, observing a possible additional safety precaution, the principal went nuclear and said, you are going to panic people in the school. I'm going to have parents pulling kids out of the school. And he impounded the newspapers when they came back from the printing plant, had them shredded, and told the teacher, it is your job to tell the students that these papers were destroyed in an accident at the printing plant by mistake, and that that's going to be our cover story. And the teacher, scared for her job, went ahead with the ruse. And that story was such an eye-opener to the people on the committee. I think there's a real sense that people want to trust that educators are going to always do the right thing and always act in the best interest of students. And when they find out that there's somebody who's willing to go so far off the rails for his own PR self-interests, that they're more willing to consider the possibility that there need to be some legal constraints. I think up until that point, people were really deferential to these school administrators and felt like they would always do the right thing. But once they find out that there, in fact, are people that are going to misuse that authority, then, you know, it's just like any other toy that people can't play with responsibly. Sometimes you have to take it away from them. And that's what we found with censorship authority as well. So sometimes it just takes that one story, but it was quite a brave thing for that teacher to come forward and to share it. And her bravery really was sort of the unsung heroism behind the New Voices of Maryland bill. So just in a minute or two that we have left, any advice or tips or ideas where if somebody's trying to get a campaign like this off the ground in their own state, and there are many people who are interested, what would you say were your takeaways that you would pass along to another person in your position?
Right. I would say you want to make sure not to do it on your own. Don't feel like you have to be alone. The Student Press Law Center was, in a huge way, it was the backbone. We were on the ground. We were the troops on the ground, but the Student Press Law Center was incredibly helpful in providing us support and encouragement, those two things. Legal support, of course, as well. Get a team together. Get journalists involved, the press association involved. Get some legislators on your side. Get students. Students. We had, if I put together how many times we had students talk, we had three students talk in the Senate, and in the House we had four different students talk, and each of them was able to go on for, like, when they were allowed, 10, 20, 30 minutes once questions were involved. And like you said, seeing those mature, earnest, caring students coming forward, it allays the legislators' concerns that, what's going to happen if the worst possible vision of any teenager that you've ever thought of suddenly has the power to say whatever they want? That's not who joins student newspapers. We don't have, I don't know if that person exists, but let's say they exist. Let's say we have, the worst delinquent from the worst movie, and certainly there are unsavory characters who exist in any area. Those aren't the people who join the student newspaper and want to write stories that benefit the public. So it's not going to be someone talking about, gossiping about someone most of the time. It's going to be responsible journalists. And you get those young, responsible journalists in front of your lawmakers, and you're going to have success. It might take some time. We got it done in about 1 year. It's not always going to take 1 year. We were ready to go through to the second year if we needed to. We didn't have to. I'd say get your team together, make sure students are part of that team, and keep going till you find success.
Well, Chris Evans, thank you so much for the leadership that you've shown in Vermont and as the head of the College Media Association's First Amendment Committee, which is a great asset that folks working in college media should be aware of. Of course, we want people to call the Student Press Law Center and report instances where they feel like their rights are threatened. But if you're interested in talking to a colleague, somebody who's been where you are, Chris Evans and the members of the CMA's First Amendment Committee are a great resource, and they do have the power, and they have on occasion issued a censure that lets colleges know that they've done wrong and lets the public know that colleges have stepped out of line, and that can be a very powerful public relations tool in correcting their behavior. So thanks so much for all of your efforts in support of a free and independent student press, and particularly for your leadership on New Voices of Vermont. For those of you who are interested in getting a movement started in your own state, there's two websites I want to leave you with. First, of course, splc.org is the one-stop place for all your legal needs. But if you're an advocate looking for some talking points or handouts or resources or model statutes about New Voices, that website is newvoicesus.com, newvoicesus.com. And there's almost certainly a Facebook group for your state. It's usually New Voices Florida, New Voices Texas, New Voices New York. It's the name of New Voices and then the name of your state. If there's not one, then reach out to us at SPLC, and we'd love to help you get started. I'm Frank Lamani, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center, and thanks again for tuning in for another edition of the SPLC's monthly podcast. Join us next month, and in the meantime, if you've got any questions about your legal rights, best way to connect with us is by email. It's just splc@splc.org. Thanks for listening.